Hi, my name is Wendy, and I'm an addict.
Hey, Wendy.
Which is it, this one? This one. And I'm very nervous. You know, they said to say what you are, and I'm very nervous. I'm from Washington, D.C., and I'm originally from Vineland, New Jersey, little chicken farm town, all Italians. I'm an Italian Catholic, and I have great guilt. And I moved from Jersey to New York, and then I ended up in Washington, D.C. I don't think I need to go through all the drugs that I did to get there, but when I was in New York, I was married to this gentleman who was on methadone. I was on a methadone program for 12 years, and I had been on methadone longer than I shot dope. And somehow, I mean, anybody that has been on methadone, you know, I really, my heart goes out to them because I know what it feels like, you know, and they asked what was the first thing I was grateful for when I came into the program, and like, I was grateful to have a bowel movement. I mean, I would get on the bus and I'd be sweating and I'd be 250 pounds and my whole life was picking up this methadone and you couldn't go anywhere and you had to pick up every day, and I was on welfare for 10 years. And I was married while I was in New York, and I got the and thing. And he came home one day and said that he was going to leave me for another lady. And I thought that was the worst thing in the whole world. I just couldn't understand it. I challenged the girl in this park. We had a big fist fight, and not only did she take my man, but she whooped my ass. And I say this all the time so that I remember this. I still wear the scar right across my face where she cut me in the face. And I think that that was my spiritual awakening. I wanted a new way of life. I was 37 years old, and I was tired. I was emotionally tired. I'm sure there were a lot of more things that I could have done. However, my cousin was in Washington, D.C., and as she had done before, she allowed me to come there. So, and the end of that story is that woman that he left me for is now ended up on my old methadone clinic. And you never know what God has in store for you. What you think is the worst thing, and I can remember praying the prayer, and I didn't have any idea what Narcotics Anonymous was. And I said, please, God, take away the pain. And it ended up that he took my husband. I didn't know that it was going to come that way, but that's how it happened. And I don't usually share this, but I will tell you how I got off of methadone, because I don't know why I don't talk about this, but I will share it tonight. I was raised Catholic. I went to Catholic school for 12 years. I wore the beanie. I was on my knees every day. And I tried to commit suicide. My mom died when I was 11, and my father wasn't a very nice person. And I tried to commit suicide when I was 13. And they thought that it was a really great idea that I change schools. So by the time I was in the 12th grade, I went to public school. I never went back to church, and I kind of like had that Madonna thing, you know, like I was really a good girl, and then all of a sudden, like, you know, I bleached my hair blonde and smoking cigarettes, and it just kind of took off from there. While I was in New York, I was so screwed up. I really was, and a friend that I was working with took me to a Baptist church, and she said, come with me. And I'm not going to get into a religious thing. I'm talking about the methadone. Honestly, I'm going to get back to it. And they gave me a little white thing to wear. It was a Baptist church. I was the only little white girl there. And I get the little bathing cap, and I went in the water. And they said, do you believe, are you really sorry for your sins? I said, yes, I am. And they said, do you believe in Jesus Christ? And I said, yes, I do. I hadn't been to church, I think, 30 years, whatever. And they dipped me down in the water. I don't know why I'm talking about this tonight. What? Anyway, and I came out choking because I'd swallowed, you know, while I was in the water. It was in front of the whole congregation. Like, why did he, you know, why was she brought here? But I came out of the water and my jaw was like this. You know, when you have a really good knot on, you're kind of like. And the message to me, it sounds corny, I know, but was just don't go back. And I never went back to my methadone program. I was on 30 milligrams, and I would lay on my couch, and I was kind of like high, like kind of okay after the whole experience. I know it sounds weird, but it's just how it happened to me. And I laid on that couch for 3 weeks, and I joined that church, and I wore those things, you know, and I was standing on the streets of New York giving out the pamphlets, come to church. And I really tried it that way. And I remember, you know, I'd quit everything. And I took a cigarette, and then I took a man, and then I took a drug. So when I had this incident in D.C., and my cousin called me and said, come. Actually, I called her and begged her to come to Washington, and I said, please let me come with you because either I'm going to get killed or I'm going to kill somebody. And I came to Washington, D.C. with all my drugs because I knew I couldn't cop in D.C. I didn't know anybody. Everything. The drawers were filled, my poor cousin Pat. And I still felt bad. So I thought it would be a really great idea to get back on methadone. Wasn't that a great idea? So I called some hotline to get back on methadone, and lo and behold, I got Narcotics Anonymous. And they said to me, if you walk right down the street from where you're living, I was on 8th and H Northeast, where we know, and, oh, we all know. I was there. And it was called Narc's Ark, and it was right near where the Pathfinders is now. And I walked down there November the 10th, 1982. And I had there everything that I had always wanted. I had all the brothers and sisters I wanted. I had all the acceptance I had ever wanted. I walked in there, and I was shaking like I'm shaking right now. And we had that little white book, and they had crayons, and I was just such a mess that, you know, I could just about talk. And I handed this to this young lady, and I said, will you be my sponsor? And that's all I know. My life changed after that. I got really involved in service. That same lady came and picked me up when I had like 30 days clean. And I said, listen, I don't know about this program, but you need to come over here and bring me a Valium because I haven't slept and I'm crazy. So come now. She said, I'll be right there. She came over to my house. She got me in the car and she handed me a book and a pencil. And she said, you're going to be the new secretary of area service. And we're on our way there now. And as we know, years ago, I mean, it was everything. It was Maryland, Virginia, and D.C., and everybody was, like, fighting and throwing stuff and punching everybody out, and I had to write it all down, you know. I slept that night. You know, I slept that night. So I kept coming back, and I kept coming back, and I had a great sponsor, and I really became involved in service, and anybody that does service work, my hat goes out to you because it is just such, you give of yourself, you know. And the other part is, sometimes you can get lost in service. And you really don't have to work on too much because you're working on your sponsees and the man and whatever, but not you. This was just my little thing. And in 1985, Washington, D.C. had the World Convention there. Staying Alive in 85, I think that was what it was. And since I had been secretary of the area service, I became secretary of the executive, whatever the hell that thing is, of the whole convention. And I was really just so engrossed in service and just really feeling a part of things. And I really did. I did a fourth step in here. My girlfriend Billy came in. She did a fourth step before me. And so I had to do it because she did it, you know. And I got to the fifth step, and that was really easy because I got diarrhea of the mouth anyway, and I was able to tell somebody and then go to all the meetings and tell them all my shit besides. And then I got to the sixth step. And I know this ain't on the sixth step tonight, but it's the willingness to change. And change you must, or go you will. And I'm not quite sure what happened, but I got stuck on that sixth step for about 3 years. And I had 10 years clean. I celebrated my 10th anniversary. I didn't come in here with a lot of emotional skills. you know, I'm a recovering incest survivor. I haven't had very good skills with men and relationships. I'm very controlling. You know, they say stay alone, and that's wonderful, and that's good, but man, get into a relationship and see really how fucked up you really are. Because, you know, like, who is that person? Who's saying that? Who is that in the mirror? You know, controlling, conniving, strings attached definitely all the time. When are you coming back, and come back soon? Why do you want to go? Because they can't stand it. And they're honest, and they say, I just want to be your friend, and bada boop, bada bip, but I'll change them. I'm going to change them, and how I'm going to change them is I'm going to change them through sex. It still don't work. I'm 55 years old. Let me tell you right now, it still don't work. It didn't work when I was 15. Didn't work when I was 37, when I was 40. And I'm telling you, it still don't work now. And it's painful. So I had about 10 years clean, and I can remember at my home group, and it's still my home group, that I looked out, and it was full. It was, I had been sponsoring like about 13 people, because my sponsor did, and there was a whole lot of folks to sponsor, so, you know, I was doing my duty for God and my country, and I looked out, and I had this black leather thing on, and I was kind of thin, and I remember I had like one of those, what are those things called, because I can't wear them no more, because I'm too fat, them things that go up your butt, a thong, honey. And I looked around, and I felt so empty. All those people that I saw out there loved me. They loved me, and I didn't love myself. And I didn't feel like I was enough. And I was in emotional pain and very, very lonely. And so what I thought a great thing would be was to have some cosmetic surgery. Doesn't that make a lot of sense? We don't want to fix our insides, so let's fix our outsides. Let's go get a nose job, because I got the Italian nose with the hump forever. And let's not tell anybody. Let's just go get the surgery. Don't tell your sponsor. Don't tell a girlfriend. Just talk to the little flaky one that wants to take you to her doctor. And recover at her house. And let her hold your medication. And I'm laughing right now, but it wasn't very funny, because I had 10 years and I relapsed. And I had worked in recovery. I was a secretary. However, I was working part-time as a addictions counselor. And I was talking a little bit too crazy on the phone, and my sponsor called me, and she said, I'm picking you up, and we're going to treatment tonight. And I had my pajamas on. We're talking about pain pills, Percocet, Demerol, that when it hit me, I did not know the difference. When my eyes went back up in my head, it was the same thing. I didn't know it was treating the physical. It was treating the emotional. And I was in pain, and my face was all cut up and all that mess. However, I just couldn't, make the fine line. I couldn't get honest with myself. And when someone told me, when you relapsed on pills, I said, wait a friggin' minute. I have not shot no dope in 10 years. I have not had a drink. I have not shot no coke. You mean to tell me I'm going to go back out on something that I couldn't get out of my bathroom cabinet? It was a lousy relapse. Didn't get to do nothing I wanted to do. And all of a sudden, I'm in friggin' treatment with 18-year-olds that are saying, clean the back of the bathtub, baby. You relapse. You know that, right? And I was shaking, and I was coming off the pills, and I thought, ugh, you know, that was the realization. And I had to go in the blue van. You know how you have to go in that van that takes all the folks to those meetings? And I used to take those folks to those meetings in the similar vans, and when I would get to the meetings, they'd say, Wendy, are they with you? And I'd say, no, I'm with them. And it was excruciating. It was excruciating, and I don't even want to say humility, because it was humiliation to come back in and pick up my white key tag again in front of all my friends. It was, they took us to this meeting, and someone was having an anniversary, and everybody was there. It was like 300 people. And they said, get up and pick up that white chip. And I said, I can't. And I was sweating in between the boobies, and it was really hot, and I had gotten fat, and my scars were all over my face, and I knew everybody there, and they said, Wendy, what do you want to do? Save your face or save your ass? I think maybe somebody even pushed my chair. I was just up getting it. I don't even remember getting it and sitting back down and my heart boom, 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 boom. And I came out of treatment. I got goosebumps right now. And I got a different sponsor. My sponsees just never even called me. They were horrified. At the time, it was, oh, yeah, it's Wendy O from D.C. that was talking all that shit and all those meetings, speaking at world conventions, and she relapsed. I want to tell you that when I came back in, 99% of the folks were said, hey, you're in the right place. Some people get afraid when you relapse. They're afraid for their own program. They're afraid for themselves. And they're kind of scared of you, and you see that in their eyes, and you feel that, that you're not fully accepted. And that, and it was hurtful to me. But I got to tell you that 99%, or at least 95%, were open to me. And I'm very grateful to God because I really didn't want to go back to that methadone program. And that looked like the best thing I could possibly do. So last November, I celebrated 5 years clean again. And I still go to that same home group. I've been going for 18 years. I would have had 18 years in November, but hey, I got five. I hadn't had a drink in 18. You know, I can go to that other thing that we're not allowed to say, right? Can I go there and still have my time? No. And I got to tell you, it's been better. It's been harder because it's really hard coming back from a relapse. And, you know, we call this relapse and recovery. For me, it was recovery, relapse, and recovery. And it's been a struggle because I'm not quite as willing. Like, I just kind of went with the flow the first time. All my girlfriends were going. I was going. Now it's really a push. I'm older. I'm afraid. I have to really look at myself. When I came in, we were going to all the conventions, all the dances, all the fellowship things. I just wanted to shake my ass, and that was about it. And I came back, and everybody was writing their steps down. What was that? What happened while I was gone? And I started writing my steps down, and guess where I got to? The sixth step. The willingness to change. And I don't know that I'm 100%. I am not really maybe even what, Jeff? 70%? Whatever. But I'm willing to write those steps. I'm willing to go to meetings. I'm willing to help somebody. I'm willing to get up and go to work every day. And I was willing to come here and bear my soul in front of you. And so I come back a day at a time. I still have the same issues. I'm a crazy lady. I squash people. I take them as hostages. I'm an Italian that's got a big friggin' mouth. I can be domineering, but I have a good heart. And basically, I think I'm a nice person. And I try to do my best to please myself, to please God, to feel clean. Not just clean, but clean inside my soul. And do the best that I can do. One day at a time. So I'm on my eighth step. Not that I'm not ever going to forget the sixth. And my sponsor kind of had to say, just write it. And what I did was, oh, I forgot to tell you what I did. So what I did was, you have a wonderful book. It's the new workbook. The green and gold one, it's fabulous. And I did the first step. I wanted to do the fourth step when I first came back in and find out where I messed up. And she said, first of all, you're on the first step. Write it. You don't say anything at meetings for the 6 months that for first 6 months, because you have nothing to say. And then we'll share it. And we did each thing. We did each step out of that book. The sixth step in that book was wonderful. And I remember that I sat by my pool with her, and we went through each question. It took us about 3 hours. It was wonderful. And then we just did a seventh step very recently. And so, like, now I'm on the eighth step. And, you know, through the years, the first 10 years, I kind of did it. You know, like, I went home on the eighth step and told my Aunt Lala I was sorry that I had stolen from her. And then someone said, you know what, you have to really look at that person or that family member that you think really screwed you up in your lifetime. Look at them, don't say a word, and forgive them emotionally. So I went to my father's grave, who I still am struggling with forgiving. And because I'm having such shitty relationships with the men that I'm with, I got to start somewhere. You know, and so I'm trying to be a better person. I'm trying to have better relationships. I'm trying to be a better second half. I'm trying to be a better first half. You know, and I just heard a fabulous meeting. The speaker, Patrice, she was wonderful. And she said, if you don't have yourself, you don't got nobody. And if you anything you put in front of God, you will lose. And boy, do I know that. And don't I always, I lose sight. I'm doing real good. There's a good thing on HBO. Oh, Showtime. Let's see what's on there tonight. Oh, it's 8:30. I should have been in a meeting. Let's see what else is on. Those little things are the traps for me. It's just the little things. It wasn't like one day, you know, I'm sure 2 years before I took that, you know, Percocet, had I just said, hey, I need help. Hey, I'm not really feeling great. But you didn't have 10 years and always complain about relationships and say that you were, I felt that I was kind of expected to be doing better. And I didn't feel that I was. I think I'm doing a little bit better this time. I think that I've been around here for 18 years, for better or for worse, and that there's no place like home. There's no place like Narcotics Anonymous. It's the place that I love. And I want to say one more thing, because the other thing that she touched on, and then I'm going to let Tony speak. The thing that I struggle with most, and I also heard this, was being a victim. And this is what I've really come to know and that I'm getting a grip on. That being a victim was very comfortable for me, still is. That if I come to you, and I don't know, that you'll feel sorry for me and you'll love me. I could have went into a very graphic story tonight about my past, how I got here, what happened, how screwed up I am, how I got there. But it really doesn't make any difference right now. And you see, it's easier to be the victim and not have to stand up for life. You don't have to be the responsible adult. When you stop being the victim, you got to go to work on time. You can't steal their stamps, honey, because then you're going to hate yourself, big time dope fiend, because you stole a friggin' stamp, because it works on my head. And when I'm on my knees at night, by the way, I haven't been on my knees in a while, but when I'm talking to God, I want to feel clean and clear, and I want to feel the best that I can feel as an instrument of Him. And I believe that we're here so that we can help the next person. That's all that I'm here for, is to just help the next person. And I want to thank you all, and I want to thank the committee for asking me to share. I'm very honored, and I'm really glad it's over. Thank you for listening.
We'd like to thank Wendy, and now we're going to have our second speaker, Tony.
My name's Tony, and I'm an addict. I'd like to start this by dedicating whatever I have to say to a person that really means a lot to me. This is dedicated to Linda M. from San Pedro, California. We know her as Dee Dee. She paid me $10 to mention her name on tape. That's for you, Dee Dee. I did all the crazy things to get in these rooms, and I started using as a party boy. It was always to have fun. It wasn't because somebody beat me bloody when I was a kid. It was I had, some people might say, a very nice childhood. I had a good family. They're still a good family. Somewhere along the line, I just loved to use dope. I loved it. I loved everything about it. I loved the lifestyle. I loved the people I hung with. But when things started going bad, when that party turned into a nightmare, all those people that were there for me as a child and there for me as growing up, I started blaming them for everything that went wrong in my life. I blamed a lot of people. I held them responsible for my actions. I never took responsibility for my own actions. I always blamed others, you know. It was like that When I was a kid, my mother used to say, "Why did you get such a terrible report card?" And I used to always say, "It's because the teacher didn't like me." See, that was the story of my life. The teacher didn't like me. The police didn't like me. The judge didn't like me. Whoever didn't like me. The boss didn't like me. It was always somebody else's fault. See, it was never my fault. That's the way my life went for a long time until that party turned into a nightmare. It turned into a big nightmare. What started out as being fun ended up on a sawhorse in my garage. I was coming out of a blackout, and I was standing on a sawhorse in my garage, and I had a rope around my neck. And I thought to myself, "What are you doing? What are you doing?" And the next thought was, "Why not? You know, just kick this sawhorse over, and all the lying, the stealing, the cheating, the self-hate, all those wonderful things of active addiction that we experience will be over with." The next thing I did was look down on the ground in my garage, and I saw my son's bicycle there. My son was a very little boy at the time, and his bicycle was on the ground, and I thought, "I can't let him come in here to get his bicycle and find me hanging. I can't leave that as my legacy to my son. I just can't do that." And I got off that sawhorse and I went into this room that we have. It's a spare room. I now call it, well, I did before we moved. I used to call it the mumbling room because I used to go there to mumble. And I went into that room and I laid there and I was crying and trying to figure, what am I going to do now? You know, I can't live like this and I can't die. And I didn't know what else to do. And I think a lot of us know what that feeling's like. We had no place else to turn, nowhere else to go. And that's when I was ready for NA. And I came in these rooms, and I was one of those newcomers that loved it from the minute I walked in. I loved it. People told me I was welcome here and please keep coming back. And I loved that. And I was one of those newcomers, if there was, when it was time to speak, hello. You want a topic? I got a topic. Would anybody else like to share? Yeah, I'd like to share. Does anybody have a burning desire? I got a burning desire. You ever heard of the silent groan? The silent groan. That's when I was sitting in the front of the room. Would anybody like to speak? I'd raise my hand and the whole rest of the room would go. Now, I know there's no one like that in this room right now, tonight. But that's the kind of newcomer I was. I had to speak at every meeting I went to. You had a problem? I got the answer. Oh, what that meant, that brother in the back of the room over there who has a problem with this and that and that and that. Here's what you need to do, brother. You need to work steps. You need to turn to God. You need to do a lot of things. I didn't know how to do any of those things. But I knew what he needed to do. I even knew how to straighten out the mothers in the room. How to be mothers. Now, you know what? I don't have a lot of experience as being a mother. But I certainly knew what you needed to do to be a mother. And it went along like that. You know, at 30 days clean, I didn't have to raise my hand as a newcomer anymore. Now I'm about something. Now I'm really going to start straightening people out. I'm straightening people out. At 90 days clean, it happened. Some sweet thing came up to me and said, "Tony," because I was such a guru by then at 90 days. "Tony, I got some dope at the house and I don't know what to do with it." I know what to do with it. We're going to go over there. We're going to get that dope. We're going to make the sign of the cross over it. Then we're going to flush it down the toilet. Right? Now, on the way over, I'm thinking, these 90 days were cool. It wasn't hard. It wasn't so bad. See, if I use tonight, let's see. When I have 5 years clean,
I'll get up in front of everybody and tell them I don't have 5 years clean, ladies and gentlemen, because everybody's got to keep track of my time, right? I only have 4 years and 9 months because when I had 90 days, I used one night. I used one night. See, I thought, a person like me thought, after being on a sawhorse, ready to kick the sawhorse out from under me, I thought that I could use successfully one more time. You know what it says in the second step? It talks about insanity and being restored to sanity. If that's not the craziest thought in the world, if that's not insanity, I don't know what is. Thinking that I could use successfully. Well, that 5 years that I talked about in that scenario there was significant because from that time on, it took me 5 years to get 90 days clean again. And that was lousy 5 years. It was going to meetings and raising my hand as a newcomer. I'd get like, you know, a week clean, 10 days clean, a month clean, come to meetings loaded. But I kept coming back and I kept coming back and I kept coming back because when things got really, 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 really bad, I knew where there was addicts that were really clean. And I knew there were addicts and I knew they were clean and I really believed that. I had the hope. You know, I didn't really think I'd clean up, but I had the hope. You gave me the hope that I could maybe, perhaps, someday, maybe I might be able to clean up too. And that's what kept me coming back. That's what kept me coming back. And I found out in those 5 years that some people carry a message and some people don't. Some people really walk their walk and some people don't. I was rejected quite a bit. And I deserved to be rejected quite a bit. But at the time, I really resented it. I didn't know that there was, like Wendy was saying, a lot of people do it for their own self-protection. You know? But it hurt nonetheless. You know, I don't believe... I heard at a convention one time that if you got loaded, the speaker was saying this, if you got loaded, you could no longer be one of my sponsees because you're no longer worthy of being one of my sponsees because you got loaded. And I thought to myself, you know, that's the same as abandoning our wounded. You know, and I don't believe that we should abandon our wounded. Now, I know everyone doesn't work the program the same way as everyone else does. And every, you know, sponsors have their own set ways of doing things. But I always, after I was fortunate enough to clean up, I never abandoned any sponsee who came back and told me they got loaded. You know, I'm going to tell you a little bit about the mother's curse. I'm sure many of you have heard the mother's curse. The mother's curse goes something like this. Tony, when you grow up, I hope you have a kid just like you. It never came true. I don't have a kid just like me. I have a kid that's a wonderful kid. He's never used in his life. He's 25 years old. And he has a really good life. But sponsees, on the other hand, are a different thing. I have a lot of sponsees that were just like me. And I know those feelings that they go through. I could identify with standing outside the room until all the newcomers introduce themselves. You know, I can identify with going to birthday meetings and seeing people that came in after you that are getting taking cakes and getting chips. That, geez, if I didn't get loaded, I'd have more time than her, or I'd have more time. I know all those things. You know. So those 5 years were really no fun. But I guess, you know, that's what I needed to do. I finally got my 90 days clean back and I got really, really, really scared. I was frightened to death that I might still use. And if I did use, I would never be able to clean up again. And that's still with me. If I use tonight, I don't know if I'll ever be able to clean up again. And so, you know, I try to keep that fresh in my mind. I got 90 days clean, and I got about 100 days clean, and about 6 months or so, I had to do this job out of town. I had to ride in San Francisco. I'm from San Francisco. And I had to drive these motorized cable cars. I seen some of them over in Chevy Chase today. They kind of look like a cable car, kind of like a bus, kind of fancy thing. I had to drive it to this little town out in the valley in California. And when you go out of town on this job, they give you money. So I had money in my pocket. And I was going to this little town, and they were having a 100-year celebration. And a 100-year celebration meant there was a party going on. And, you know, I'm a party boy. You know, I thought, party? Party, that's cool. I could dig a party. I don't have to get loaded at no party just because it's a party, right? And no one knew me there. Now, I don't know about you, but when I was having all those hard times staying clean, if you didn't see me using, it was almost like I didn't use. See, you didn't know it, so that's okay. It didn't happen. Kind of like if I'm home alone and no one else is there, and there's a half a gallon of ice cream in the refrigerator, I could eat that half a gallon of ice cream and it's not fattening because nobody else knows I ate it. Can you identify with that? That's the way it is for me. So you don't know I did it, it's okay. You know, that's a sign of low self-esteem. See, what you think about me is more important than what I think about me. That's what that says. What you think about me means more to me than what I think about myself. So if you don't know that I got loaded, that was more important to me than me knowing that I got loaded. So I'm going out of town and I have this extra money. Now money to me is not, I don't know about you, but money to me is not money. Not really. Money to me is dope waiting to be converted. You know, I used to be one of those kind of people that when when the wheels would fall off and everything was really bad and no one would give me any more credit and all that kind of stuff. You know what? I am never, ever going to use that shit again. I am never going to use that shit. I am never going to use that shit again. Then I get $50 in my pocket. A paycheck or whatever it was. You know, like, I have to go to the connection anyway to pay him what I owe him. Right? Well, shit, as long as I'm here, well, I could just do it, you know, just a little bit. That is not going to hurt anything. And you know what happens after a little bit. There's no such thing as a little bit for me. I don't know about for you, but for me, there's no such thing as a little bit. Because what happens is that I'm in that same place again, in that same horrible feeling with those same horrible thoughts. And so where am I? I'm on my way to Newman, California, right on a cable car. What happened? Anyway, I'm driving down there and I know no one down there. They're having a party. I got money in my pocket. And I get there and I do the parade. I was driving in a parade. I had the granddaughter of the Pooh Bahs or whoever it was on the cable car. And we did the parade, and they put me up in a hotel. So I'm in this hotel, and the hotel has a bar, and they have some music going on at this bar, and you have to walk through the bar in order to get to the restaurant. And they're feeding me, you know, they're paying for my food, my room, and all that stuff. So I'm walking through the restaurant, and there's music playing, and this woman grabs hold of me. She says, "Are you married?" Money, nobody knows me, party going on, and now she's asking me if I'm married, right? So I look at her, I had to think about it for a little while, and then I said, "Yes, I'm married." I wasn't wearing a ring. And I said, "Yes, I'm married." She goes, "Is your wife here this weekend?" I said, "No." She goes, "Well, then you ain't married this weekend." And I go, "God, please, why? Why me?" And then I said, "Well, listen, honey, I'm going to go eat dinner. You know, I'm tired. I'm going to go eat dinner. And after dinner, if I feel like dancing or something, I'll come back out. She goes, okay, I'll be here. And I go, okay. So I go and I get in the restaurant and I'm eating my dinner. I look up and she's looking in. I go, oh, God. And then they start, you know, the famous committee starts. You know you can't go out there. You know you can't go out there. Go ahead. Nobody knows you're here. It ain't going to hurt you. You can just go dance. You know you love to dance. You can just dance. You know you don't have to do anything. You know you're not going to just do nothing. You know you're not going to. Oh, I could just drink Calistoga. No, you can't. Yes, you can. No, you can't. And I'm going, oh, jeez, leave me alone. So then I go inside. I go back out and I say, listen, I'm going up to my room. And I'll probably be down a little while. So I go up to my room, and I'm thinking, I got to get to a meeting. I have got to get to a meeting. I look in the phone book. I'm in Newman, California now. You have to understand, Newman, California is a small farm town in the middle of the San Joaquin Valley. There's no NA meetings in Newman, California. The closest meeting to Newman, California at that, I hope they have one now, but the closest meeting to Newman, California at that time was Modesto, which was 40 miles away, and I'm in a cable car. I'm not getting to Modesto, not that night. So I'm laying there thinking, well, you going downstairs? No, you're not going downstairs. Yes, you are. No, you're not. Yes, you are. You know, the same thing's going on and on and on. I look out the window, and there's another bar right across the street, and it's got about 3,472 motorcycles parked in front of it. I looked at those motorcycles, and I said, there's some dope in that bar across the street. I know that. You know what? I could give any one of you $100. I guarantee you. I could give any one of you $100. Take you to some town that you know absolutely nobody in the town, and within 15 minutes, you could cop. I know you. See, I know all of you. You can cop. You know, we see each other. We know each other. You know, we have it down, don't we? I mean, right? Am I wrong or what? So I'm laying in that room thinking, God, please. Then I started thinking about the 5 years. 5 years of misery. See, the idea of me again was coming back to me that I could use successfully that night. And I started praying. And I go, God, please. Please, God, not tonight. If I feel like using this bat in 1 hour from now, I'm going downstairs. But please, not right now. Please. And I've heard this same story many times from many different people, that we have to do it sometimes, like, just a little bit at a time. Maybe we can't chew off a big whole day at once. But I knew that I could just hang on for one more hour. And I was praying in that room and praying in that room and praying in that room until I fell asleep. And I woke up the next morning, bright and early, 6 o'clock in the morning, I was awake and I was still clean. And I still had the money in my pocket. And that woman was still downstairs waiting. No, she wasn't. And I felt real, 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 real good. I felt really good. I felt like a little kid that was on his way to the circus. You know, with a tickly feeling inside your stomach, and you feel like skipping when you're a little kid. Things are going good. I get some new skates today or something, you know? I felt really good. And I thought, I got to tell somebody. I really got to tell somebody. I'm going to call my wife. That's novel. I call my wife. I go downstairs and I get on the telephone, and it's 6 o'clock in the morning now. I go, honey, guess what? She goes, what? I didn't get loaded last night. She goes, that's good. I said, but you don't understand. I'm out of town and there's a party going on here. She goes, I know that. I said, but I got money in my pocket. She goes, I know that. I said, nobody knows me here. She goes, I know that. And then I said, no, I didn't tell her about that woman downstairs. She knows about it now, though. You know that gorilla that we have inside of us? The one that some of us might still be awake and some of us it's asleep now, but nonetheless, it's there. That gorilla inside of us that says, I don't care what you plan on doing today, Today we're getting loaded. Today we're getting loaded, and it's like it twisted my guts. We're getting loaded today. We're getting loaded today. We're getting loaded today. And it was like I was compelled. It's like I had no defense against that. That stayed with me for a long, long time, for many, many years. And that morning when I called my wife after staying awake that night and falling asleep praying, that gorilla has never woken up since. And that was over 13 years ago, and I'm still clean. You know? I know all those feelings that people who have a hard time staying clean feel. I know how that feels. I know the rejection sometimes it causes, the pain, and the misery. I'd like to thank all the people that were kind and gentle to me, even though I couldn't stay clean. I really appreciate that. You know, how do you say thank you to somebody who saved your life? What do you say? Just thank you? Thank you. You know, I believe we're here for each other. I believe that there's not one of us here that's any better than anyone else, any other of us here. And that's great. Clean to me is like, there was a time when I thought I would never be clean. It was like a dream, and I couldn't attain that dream. And you showed me how to attain that dream. I had to do some work for it, but you showed me how to do that kind of work. What to do, how to do it. You know, I had to learn a lot of things. I had to learn how to change my value system, because I had no value system. My value system was wrong. You know, it was just plain wrong. And the values I learned in here are, they work for me. Things work for me. My life is good. I know you've heard that before, but my life is really good. I have a wife that loves me, and I love her. You know, we've been married for, this year it'll be 35 years. Now, yeah, damn is right. Sometimes it's really damn. No, it's great. It's great. You know, I was the person who was close to losing my job many, many times for, you know, absenteeism, tardyism, all those kind of things that using drug addicts do. And now I'm the one that keeps track of everybody else's time. So I'm the boss. I like it. No, sometimes I can't stand it. You know how you really get pissed off at somebody that reminds you of they do the same thing that you used to do and then try to give you the same excuses that you gave your boss? It's kind of tough. It's like having those sponsees that give me the same reasons why they can't do some of the stuff that you ask them to do. I can't do that. No. Like, no. You won't do that. Don't tell me you can't, because you can. You know, I do other things now. You know, I'm still very highly involved in NA. You know, I go to a lot of meetings. I do the service I need to do. I'm not a quote-unquote service junkie, but I do service. Let me tell you something about the service I used to do. I used to do service that wasn't really service. What I used to do was public relations work for Tony. You see, I'd go do something, and the minute I did it, I did something in the guise of service, say. And the minute I did it, I came to a meeting, and I had to tell the whole meeting what service I did, you know. And now I don't need to, I don't need to blow my own horn a lot at a group level. Usually I don't even, you know, like, when I had, when I cleaned up, I told you about how I loved to speak at every meeting I went to. I was one of those kind of people. When I cleaned up, I remember I called up a friend and I said, you know, I got loaded. And what's wrong with you? Why did you? What's you going to do? You're going to lose everything. Oh, you're never going to get rid of that. And then I called this other friend up and he said, would you like to go to a meeting? And I said, yeah, I'd like to go to a meeting. And so he came and got me. No, he asked me if I wanted to go to the movies. I said, no, I want to go to a meeting. And he came and got, no, I went and got him. He didn't drive. And we went to the meeting. And I don't remember a heck of a lot about that meeting. I don't remember who spoke. I don't remember where it was. What I do remember was on the way home, I'm thinking, I can't go on like this. And I remember telling him, I'm going to do something different this time. And he looked at me and goes, you're going to do something different this time. What are you going to do this time that's different? I said, this time I'm going to go to 90 meetings in 90 days. He looked at me and said, you crazy. You've been to 90 meetings in 90 days about 100 times. I said, but this time, I'm not going to speak at any meeting for 90 days. And he looked at me. He goes, you're not going to speak at any meeting for 90 days. And I said, yeah. He said, I'm going with you. So we went. You know, I spoke a lot during the break. I talked about the secretary. I talked about the speakers. I talked about the people who shared. I talked about the coffee. I talked about everything. But during the meeting, I didn't speak. Now, I don't know why I didn't speak. I figured because it was something different that I never tried, and I didn't speak for 90 days. And I found out in that 90 days, not that it was so important. See, this is my story. I'm not telling anybody else they have to do this. But it was important for me because since I wasn't sitting in the room thinking up what real cool, profound lug of wisdom I was about to drop on you. You know, pearl of wisdom. I say lug of wisdom. That's cool. With pearl of wisdom I was going to drop on you, I didn't have to. I was able to listen to the person who was actually sharing. That was kind of cool. See? And so I got those 90 days and I got the, you know, now I got the 13 years and blah, blah, blah. And I still try to listen when people are sharing. I learned that was kind of like a good technique for me. It was a good drill for me to listen to what was really going on. And you know what? I am so happy that I've been able to come out here and meet with friends again and have a good time and meet new friends. And believe me, you know what? The fellowship's alive and well every place I've been. You know, I love the way I've been treated in Maryland, D.C. It's just wonderful, you know. For those of you that are having a hard time staying clean, who've experienced the things I've experienced about, you know, not coming into the meeting until after the newcomers introduce themselves and all those things. You know, you don't know if you're going to get loaded this week or next week or if you're going to be able to stay clean. You have those feelings. I had them too. I know what they're like. You know, I know what it's like to feel like an outsider in a room of recovery. I know what that's like. And it's not fun. I'm here to tell you that I love you. I want you to stay clean. And I hope that you want me to stay clean too. You know, because I found that the big secret about this is that we're all here together because none of us was able to do this alone. Thank you for letting me share.
My name is Demetria and I'm an addict. And I'd like to thank the speakers for speaking, and we still have 10 minutes left, and if there's anyone that'd like to share, they can come up front to the mic.